Good morning, 7:39 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Ben Scola Morning News. Great to have you with us on this weirdly foggy, overcast, just icky sort of. You know, it's not raining, so that's good, but still, it's not nice out. Thursday morning. Mike Wood is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. He always joins us on a Thursday. Mike, welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Couple of kind of incidents to get to, and then I have some kind of in the news stuff that I want to get your perspective on. We had a, I think it was about a week and a half ago, but of course last week we didn't really get to a lot of the eventsy type stuff with Chief Brown. But we had a pedestrian who died on Three Mile Bridge. I feel like I may have even driven past when this was happening, but what happened here?
So it was a pedestrian that was not on the bridge, it turns out. It was an individual that was found in a grassy area near Wayside Park. We believe that this may have been a health issue that caused the man to collapse and pass away. So there's no foul play involved. And the initial reports were that the individual was on the pedestrian path of the bridge, which turned out to be inaccurate.
Okay, so it was just at the Wayside Park on the, you know, Pensacola side. That's all, but it wasn't in the bridge itself. Okay. All right. And, you know, unfortunately, yes. People pass away. I mean, that does happen a lot, unfortunately. You had an incident that took place where a felon was fleeing and then wound up in the car fleeing and hitting one of your vehicles. Is that right?
Yeah, this was some officers observed this individual, and they knew who he was. They knew he was a violent felon near the New Baptist Hospital. The individual drove down a dead-end road where officers attempted to box him in. The suspect vehicle was able to reverse direction, strike one of our cruisers, and get away. The pursuit went for a short amount of time after that, but they called it off because of excessive speeds in a residential area. That's something that we're just not going to do most of the time. And then a short time later, the vehicle was found after canine tracks and after the use of our drone. We also had the assistance of the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, which we always appreciate. But the individual was not found. But we do know who he is, and a warrant would be issued for that individual's arrest.
Okay. And a lot of times, you know, the calling off of the pursuit is never you don't love to have to do that, but obviously you make the cost benefit analysis and figuring, well, okay, we don't have to catch him today. We can catch him tomorrow or in a week or, you know, whatever the case may be. Right.
Yeah. There are some times that most of the time we're going to call it off when it gets dangerous. There are very few times that we're just going to go because how dangerous this person is. If they had just shot several people or a law enforcement officer or something like that, we've got to stop them, then that pursuit may continue. But this is something that we do, a decision that we make on a case-by-case basis, and it's made in a couple of seconds.
And usually a lieutenant on duty makes that call typically, is that right?
Well, it can be any supervisor on duty. It can also be the officer. Nobody knows the situation, the weather and the traffic and the speed like the officer that's in the pursuit. And that officer also has the ability to call that off.
Gotcha. Okay. We had an incident, I think, overnight or this morning involving a house fire.
Yeah, that was this morning near 6th and Bobie. We received a call of a house fire. Officers got there and discovered there were several people inside the home, and they were able to remove those people without injury. The fire department also showed up very quickly and extinguished that fire. And then it looks like this may have been intentionally set. So investigators and crime scene officials are on the scene as we speak, trying to figure that out.
Wow. How did your officers get there so fast, even to beat the fire department?
Well, officers are already out there, and it happens often that we get there first on fire calls and on medical calls. But this particular house was not too far from Station 1, and the fire department got there quickly as well.
What, and I mean, this is kind of amazing. So your officers went into a burning building to rescue these people? Is that what I understood you to say?
I don't have the particulars on exactly what happened. I just know that the officers were there and were able to remove them without serious injuries. Whether they physically took them out or they were able to run out on their own is something I need to get back with you on.
Oh, okay. And I mean, because it's scary stuff, but like, I don't even know how much training PPD gets on that scenario. Obviously, firemen get all kinds of training on that, but training and or not really. I mean, I'm assuming you don't carry any kind of equipment with you for that. You're not carrying masks and rebreathers or anything like that, right?
No, and I can tell you from somebody that has been trapped in a house fire, I did the wrong thing. I'm 6'4", and standing up in a burning home is one of the dumbest things you can do. There's a lot of truth to there being oxygen on the floor, mm-hmm. the first 2 or 3 feet. If you get down and crawl, you're avoiding the heat, the gases, and the smoke. So that's the thing to do is get on that floor and crawl. But it's a dangerous situation that officers aren't in every day. We do not have the equipment to do that, but we're not going to stand by under any circumstances when someone is inside a home.
Yeah, I mean, that's excellent. And you're exactly right. It's the stuff we learned as kids, you know, stop, drop, and roll, and get low in the house, and, you know, all the advice that we get about that, you know, it doesn't necessarily come back to you in your emergency moment, right? Just like anything else, we talk about gun training. You know, do you train enough so that when there's an emergency, you react that way? Well, that's a hard thing because the natural thing is to stand up and go. A couple of things in the news that I wanted to ask you about. The first one, Mike, is there's a story out there. I think it's Uber is now allowing you to select, if you're a female, to select a female driver. And I fully understand this, that women are more comfortable being driven around by women who they perceive as less of a threat. But I was also wondering, because women can be monsters too, you know, and women do perpetrate crimes. I was just kind of curious if there's, you know, real data behind the idea of who's more of a threat to the female rider, if it is in fact the men, or if that's just kind of a belief we all have, or, you know, just kind of thoughts about this proposal to allow women to feel safer by having female drivers.
Well, I don't know about the data, but what I can tell you is that, you know, we've been telling people for years about stranger danger, never, ever get into a vehicle with a stranger. And now, look, we've got ride sharing where that's exactly what you're doing. And data or not, if a female rider feels more comfortable with a female driver, then they should be able to pick a female driver. And that's simply all there is to it. There are less encounters, violent encounters, female on female than there are male on female. So if they feel more comfortable being able to pick a driver that's female, then I believe that's what they should do.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the old advice. It's like my martial arts instructor way, way, way back in the day, is that the best advice in a situation to keep you safe is if you've got a gut instinct that says to leave, leave. And he always said it about, like, you get into an elevator. If you're a woman, you get into an elevator and you feel uncomfortable, get out. And same thing, you know, with a ride share. Just because you ordered it doesn't mean you can't get out and quit, right?
Yeah, well, if the driver pulls up and you don't like what you see, then just say, no thanks, I'll get another one. You don't really have to give them an excuse, just don't get in the car.
Yeah, that's great advice. I also wanted to ask you, it's been a lot in the news in the last couple of days, this incident in Jacksonville where, as I understand it, the police pulled this guy over, told him to get out. He had opened the door and was kind of on the verge of getting out, and then for whatever reason changed his mind, closed the door, and was filming this whole thing. And the part of the video that's gotten all the attention, of course, is the police breaking the window, punching him, him taking it, you know, very stoically, and then getting dragged out. But I, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, I'm always curious what a cop sees, because you see it differently than I do. But what do you see in this incident?
Well, first of all, when a person is under arrest, and this individual was told that he was under arrest, we have to effect that arrest. We have to follow through. We can't just say, okay, he's locked himself in, we'll go talk to him and arrest him another day. That's not something that we can do. We have to follow through with that arrest. So when he refuses to get out of the car, the officers have every right to break the window to effect that arrest. Now, that's one part. The other part is that's a little disturbing to me, and I'm most all law enforcement officers would agree with this, is the punch in the face while the individual was sitting in the car, not offering any active resistance. This sitting in the car, locking yourself in, is called passive resistance. So the punch in the face is disturbing, and I believe that it is to the agency that's involved, and I think that they are looking into that portion of the incident.
Okay, so this is, as is often the case, you've got levels of resistance and levels of force to gain compliance, and you can only ratchet up your level of force to gain compliance based on what the suspect is doing. And in this case, as you say, sitting there in the car doesn't justify a punch in the face. It justifies breaking the window, opening the door, wrestling him out, but not the act of violence like you were talking about, which makes perfect sense to me. And also, again, like so many of these videos, make sure you watch all the video from the beginning, not just the part that you're getting seen on TV, right?
That's exactly right. And there's claims that there was a knife on the floorboard, but it didn't look like the individual was reaching for anything. So you've got to look at the totality in both sides of everything. Perspective to someone is can be fact to them. What they see, what they perceive, is fact to them at the moment. So that's why these incidents are always investigated very thoroughly.
Yeah, and even the I think you always have to give some deference, and frankly on both sides, but you have to give some deference to situations move fast, and you know, play by play, frame by frame analysis is a luxury that the people in the situation don't have. And so and that goes on both sides. But, you know, it can look different on the instant replay than it does to the refs in real time. And the refs in real time are the ones who have to make the decision. And so, you know, keep that in mind. We always like to end with a bit. And if I'm wrong, please tell me I'm wrong. But same.
Well, yeah, let me say one thing, that 100% of the time, if no resistance is offered, 100% of the time, the officer will not have to respond to resistance or fighting. So if you don't resist arrest, which you do not have the right to do, the fight is supposed to be for the courtroom. But if you comply with officers' instructions on the street, nobody will ever get hurt. And that's the thing that needs to be remembered.
You always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know. You have one for me this week?
Yeah. So has a sitting president ever been arrested, and not by the federal officers or the marshals or the state police, but has a sitting president ever been arrested by a city police officer on patrol, just an officer on patrol?
What?
And the answer to that is yes.
What?
The answer to that is yes. Yeah. Would it happen in this day and time? I don't know, but it would. There would be a lot more to it because presidents are heavily guarded, but...
And this has got to be like an 1800s story or something. When did this happen?
Yeah, there you go. 1872 in Washington, D.C., President Grant was arrested, and get this, for speeding in a horse-drawn carriage. I don't think radar was available back then. I'm curious to know how you know he was speeding unless just the horse was in a full gallop, but yeah, he was arrested for speeding and had to pay a $20 fine and eventually released.
They arrested the general for speeding when he was the president?
Yeah. Yes,
oh,
they did.
That's amazing.
So this is a normal city beat officer on patrol doing his job, and he took his job very seriously, obviously.
Wow, that guy either got promoted or fired. Do you know which?
No. No. I'd stay away from that, but those are the facts that I have on hand.
I want to know outcomes now. Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, all right. Well, but to be clear, nobody from PPD has ever arrested a sitting president, even for speeding in a horse-drawn carriage.
Absolutely not.
Very good. Mike Wood, he's the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thank you for the time, keeping us informed and teaching us all a fact that none of us knew, I think. We'll talk to you again next week.
That's what we do.
You're the best, brother.